and welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sitarani Palomar.
We have a wonderful show lined up for you today as we are celebrating the world of seeds with a fabulous guest, seed expert and author Janice Ray, here on An Organic Conversation today.
Yeah, you know what? Having Janice on reminds me, when I was looking through her book, reminds me of a story that I once read in a book called Seeds of Change. And it talked about this Peruvian farmer who carried seeds in his pocket because it reminded him of being connected to life. And from that time on, I've done the same thing. As a matter of fact, I just put some seeds in front of Sita today. But I really love that whole connection that you get just from something that just by the simple act of putting it in the ground can grow something and turn into something miraculous. I love that.
Yeah, seed is life. Sita.
You know, I have never really had much of a relationship with seeds other than pumpkin seeds and sunflower seeds and flax seeds and whatever seeds I eat. But I really think it's probably more simple than I'm making it. And having Janice on the show to talk to us about what are kind of the practical applications to make seeds a part of your daily life is something I'm really looking forward to, because it's about time.
And funny too that you say that, because I know you're dealing and cooking with seeds every single day. And as for all of us on this planet, we are all come from seed. We are all nourished by seeds. We deal with seeds in one way or another every single day. There's no life, there's no world without seeds. So this will be a fascinating show.
And we strive to succeed.
Yes, later in the show we will succeed.
But first, here's the green headlines with Jeff Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. Washington Credit Union and food groups help farmers grow. New farmers in Skagit County, Washington, are getting a much-needed boost from a new microloan program designed to help small and beginning farmers. The program partners Slow Money, Northwest, Viva Farm, North Coast Credit Union, Washington State University Extension, and Food Investors to extend credit services to farmers through a new program called the Farmer Reserve Fund. The nonprofit project grants loans that allow small-scale farmers to purchase equipment and supplies and then repay them within a year. Chinese botanists preserve 1,100 Tibetan plant species. Chinese botanists have collected the seeds of more than 1,100 plant species found in the Tibet region and preserve them in a national germplasm bank, also known as a seed bank, called the China Germplasm Bank of Wild Species. Researchers with the Institute of Tibetan Plateau Research at the Chinese Academy of Sciences have gathered the seeds over the past 5 years, collecting native plants or those with significant economic value. A study in 2011 showed that Tibet's environment is home to one of the most diversified gene pools in the world, with over 9,600 wild plant species, 855 of which are unique to Tibet. India places temporary ban on tiger tourism. The Supreme Court of India imposed an indefinite ban on tiger tourism last month, closing core areas of tiger reserves in support of conservation efforts. The court's response to the decreasing population of the endangered species requires all states to identify core zones of tiger reserves in an effort to regulate tourist attraction locations. India is home to 1,706 tigers, the world's largest population, down from an estimated 40,000 in 1947, causing an investigation of the environmental impacts of ecotourism. The court is expected to release its final ruling on August 22nd. And former McDonald's CEO opens healthy, sustainable fast food restaurant. Mike Roberts, former president and CEO of McDonald's, has co-founded a new restaurant aiming to do healthy food on a fast food scale called Life Kitchen, standing for Love Your Food Every Day. The restaurant's menu focuses on food made without butter, cream, white sugar, white flour, high fructose corn syrup, trans fats, GMOs, and additives. In addition, the meat is free-range, grass-fed, and humanely raised. The restaurant has plans to follow other positive measures, such as no soft drinks, gluten-free and paleolithic options, along with serving local food and operating out of green buildings. Roberts plans to open 500 to 1,000 outposts of Life Kitchen across the country over the next several years. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thank you, Jen. That's Jen Lloyd with that weekly update of what's going on in the world of green living and sustainability. Wow, the former CEO of one of the largest fast food chains in the world is going green and natural.
I love it. I think it just continues to show that people can change and that things can get better. I mean, you know, 1,000 outposts is going to pale in comparison to how many McDonald's there are, but just to have 1,000 restaurants
super
around
strong
it,
start.
Yes.
It's a big start and it allows people an option. And even though we are all supporters of slow food and being close to your food, I mean, sometimes there are people who it'd be nice for them to have a nice alternative on the run.
Yes.
Yeah, sometimes you need a fast option, right? Like even us who are all big supporters of slow food, if we've had super late meetings, we're coming back from something, it's 10:30, all the restaurants and grocery stores are closed, what are your options? And for me, I was raised a vegetarian. My entire life, my entire community has been saying, wouldn't it be great if somebody opened kind of a healthy, really conscious fast food chain so that if you needed a quick option, you had something that was really, they were thinking about it. You know, not that this one is entirely vegetarian, but you know that they're going to have those kinds of options because
right.
their focus is on vegetables.
Right.
Well, their focus is on what people are actually asking for, right? Paleolithic, vegan, nice. And it's following the footsteps of other chains like Chipotle, who a couple of years ago, I think, made a radical shift, or 3 years ago, including natural meats and organic options and such. And so, and buying from local growers, actually. And that completely turned the company around. So even if the motivation is based on economic reasons or grounds, wonderful. It's a good development. Thank
it's
you
a good start.
For that.
Yeah.
Yes. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Coming up is our conversation with Janice Ray, author and seed expert, as we are delving into the amazing world of seeds and seed saving, only here on An Organic Conversation. More on that when we come back. Stay tuned.
Oh, Lamb Moses, I have been removed. I have seen the specter. He has been here too.
And we're back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Our topic today is the story in the seed, preserving the past, saving the future. Many of us know something about seeds. Some of us work with seeds almost every single day. It's a fascinating world. Take a carrot seed, for example. A carrot seed is less than half a millimeter in diameter, a tiny speck of dirt. Really dust in the wind, and yet it contains millions of years of DNA, intelligence that, once put into soil with a bit of water, turns the seed into a big, orange, healthy, nutrient-rich, delicious, bioflavonoid-packed, eye-disease-preventing vegetable. And if this is not enough, halfway through the growing cycle, the seed knows to produce carrot tops, an exceptionally efficient solar power plant that supplies the carrot with energy converted straight from sunlight through photosynthesis. During the growth from seed to carrot, the carrot collects and stores the climate data, including all environmental nuances of the region, such as soil quality, duration of sunshine, and so that the next generation of seeds will be even better equipped and adapted than the generations of carrots that have been eaten before. A carrot is a natural memory stick, and its seed is an ocean of knowledge. What a miracle. Our topic today here on An Organic Conversation is the story in the seed, preserving the past, saving the future. We are talking about seeds and seed saving in this hour with our wonderful guest, seed expert and author, Janice Ray, who is joining us today from Southern Georgia. Janice, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, and what a beautiful and eloquent introduction. I wish I'd spoken with you before I wrote this book.
Oh, me too.
Oh my gosh, a natural memory stick. There's some incredible metaphors there.
Yes, if that would have saved me a place in your amazing book, I would have loved a call. Let's talk about that. It's a wonderful book, and it's actually not just a guide of how to preserve seeds, how to save seeds after the harvest, but it's really a book about, the movement. It's the stories around the seeds. It's the stories that evolve when we come in contact with seeds that you found. So from poetry to seed saving, tell us about your career as an author. What brought you to write this book?
I started out as a nature writer. I'm very concerned about the environment, and I have just this gigantic passion for poetry and words. And I want my words to be used to the best advantage to try to make positive change on the earth. So after years of writing about nature and then, becoming an activist, I began to just see around me a lot of hopeless stories. Turn on the radio and there's more drought, more wildfires. But one thing that was lighting people on fire was the good food movement. I think we've come to understand organic in this country, that to eat or without chemicals is healthier for us and for the environment. And we are understanding local, that to eat more food grown closer to home is better for our bodies and better for the atmosphere. And I just thought, I've been a seed saver so long, I thought, I want to think about putting some of these stories down about seeds. I just think it's time that we understand that our seed supply is in jeopardy. And as you all said before, every mouthful of food we eat is absolutely dependent on a seed, and yet very few people understand what's really happening with them. So it was out of hopefulness and then my never-ending optimism that I decided to do this.
Well, that, when in looking through your book and reading your book, that's Helga and I were sitting the other day reading your book, and we were just like, wow, this is just such a wonderful use of, I can tell you love words because I just couldn't put the book down. And it's more than a how-to guide. This is, as you're saying, is really a book of stories of hopefulness and insight to the world of the seed and the people and how seeds affect people and how they affect others. And can you tell us a couple of the encounters that that were life-changing for you, whether it be a plant or a person or an event that that you put in this book?
I think one of the most life-changing things was to actually know my grandparents. My grandfather was a small, diversified farmer in southern Georgia, 30 miles or so from where I now live. My memory is of my grandfather's mules and his fields of sprawling watermelon vines. My grandfather was farming long before the so-called Green Revolution came about. I remember my grandmother milking a cow when I was in kindergarten and younger. When I was about 11, she gave me a very interesting bean seed that I grow in my garden now. It's called a jack bean. It's not so edible. It's used for forage and other things in other countries. But it's just a very interesting, oddity. And I think she set me on a path to loving plants. When you talked a minute ago about what's in a carrot, millions of years of DNA, I think about this. Flowering plants first appeared on Earth, 100 million years ago. Humans, we've been here a couple of hundred thousand years, 200,000 or so. So all of our time on Earth has been spent in relationship with plants. Plants are what actually took this, this big planet that was full of carbon and made it habitable for humans. for at least 12,000 years and maybe as many as 70,000, we have been playing around with our foodstuffs, domesticating, diversifying, adapting plants so that they would feed us more plentifully and more well. So I'm just very grateful that my grandmother awakened in me that long history that all of us have that's almost a part of our DNA. And then beyond that, I visited many wonderful seed savers, but I have to say that work in my garden is really meditation more than anything. And I think it's the miracles that I have been able to see in my garden, you know, sitting, weeding among pigeon peas and looking up and seeing a hummingbird family, two hummingbirds teaching the young to fly. Just beautiful things have happened to me in the garden. I know this makes me sound like a loner. I really love people.
That's okay.
It makes you sound like a poet, which
yes.
You are.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation, and the topic today is the story in the seed, preserving the past and saving the future. We are talking with Janice Ray, who is joining us today from Southern Georgia. Janice is an author of a wonderful book, The Seed Underground, A Growing Revolution to Save Food, and also a seed saver.
So, Janice, the title seed saving, or the word seed saving, implies that there's something at stake. What is the threat to seeds right now that didn't exist in the time of your grandparents, for example?
So at the turn around 1902, a large catalog was produced that listed the seeds available commercially at that time in this country. And a couple of times later, in 83 and again in 04, scientists have looked at those varieties and compared them with varieties available in our national seed laboratories and also just varieties available commercially today. And it's looking, the figures differ, but it's looking like there is a 93-95, the United Nations says a 75% loss of seed varieties worldwide, but a huge loss of seed varieties. Now, we have to ask ourselves why. I think there are many reasons why, but in general, the loss is due to the industrialization of agriculture. It came about with the Green Revolution, with chemical fertilizers introduced into these small diversified farms that were all over this country. And with the advent of fertilizers, then farmers could produce more, which led to more commercialization and standardization, mechanization, tractors, and so forth. So what happened is that this led to larger and larger acreages planted in smaller and smaller cultivars. It also led to farmers who were just planting truck vegetables for, you know, years, planting more commodity crops. And then when you add to that the fact that 80% of us now live in urban areas, and in 1900, 41% of Americans farmed, now less than 2% farmed, then what you have is just the abandonment and human neglect of species of vegetables and also fruits. What would have happened in my grandfather's time and your grandfather's is that they would have planted these local place adapted. So my grandfather would have been saving his own corn seed year after year, and he did. He had he stored it over winter to feed his animals in a corn crib, but he also took out a coffee can or two for planting the next year. And he did it, and over time, his seeds became place-adapted. So, you know, when he died, now his farm is leased by my family to chemical farmers who are growing Roundup-ready soybeans. So you see here the entire cycle of agriculture in this country. And, you know, my family could be poster children for this. But the hopeful part of it is that when we're looking at this movement of people who are flocking to farmers markets and farm stands and natural food stores, and people just taking up farming again, small farming, truck farming, it's not that we've made a circle and we're looping back to the place where my grandfather farmed. We're actually looping ahead to this, to a different place. We're coming there better prepared, well armed with great information about the life of the soil and what the soil needs. Soil is everything. The healthiest way to grow food is to love the soil. And I think we have to add to that, love the seed.
Yes, and that's why your book is called The Seed Underground, A Growing Revolution to Save Food. We want to hear more about that growing revolution that you are part of leading. The story in the seed, preserving the past, saving the future, our topic today here on An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And with us, joining us from Southern Georgia, is Janice, seed saver and wonderful author, Janice Ray. That is. Janice, stay with us for a moment. We'll take a super quick break and we'll be right back with more on the story of seed saving and the growing revolution that is taking place in this country and around the world right now.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Do you have a passion for healing through healthful organic food? Become an expert in nutrition, the prevention of illness, and the promotion of optimal health. The Bowman College Distance Learning Program is a convenient, self-paced program that prepares you for a successful career as a nutrition consultant in your own home, on your own time, in a way that's organic to you. Start on your path to holistic health today with the Bowman College Distance Learning Program. Find out more at bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
The topic of the hour is the story in the seed, preserving the past and saving the future. It's all about seed saving with our wonderful guest, seed expert and author, Janice Ray, with her brand new book, The Seed Underground, A Growing Revolution to Save Food. An amazing book that speaks as much about the practical application as well as the political importance of saving seeds and all the stories she encountered around that topic. Before we dive back into that interview, though, here's our very own Mark Mulcahy, produce expert Mark Mulcahy. PE with the weekly update of what's in season.
Well, we are talking about something that has only been in the market for, I don't know, 20 years or something like that, maybe even a little bit less. We're talking about Pluots today. And on the line, we've got the familiar voice of the San Francisco produce market, Earl Herrick from Earl's Organic Produce, to talk a little bit about what's going on with those in the market today. Earl, what's happening with Pluots today?
Well, hey, Mark, how y'all doing?
Hi,
Earl. Hi,
Earl.
Good morning to y'all. Well, what's happening with Pluots? Well, I think people are missed. I think it's a misunderstood fruit. You know, when people go shopping, they go, "Well, that looks like a plum over there." And
sure does.
And so, what a Pluot really is a plum apricot hybrid. So, but it is not an aprium.
It is not an aprium. That's where you keep your reptiles or something.
It is
right?
Not a what?
What is that?
An atrium.
An aprium is another hybrid of a plum and an apricot, but it's more apricot than plum.
And so that a Pluot is more plum than apricot.
Yes. And, you know, there is no, 75% or 50-50. These hybrids come about through lots of cross-cultivation and grafting. It is a pretty complex thing. But what you can be assured of is a pretty unusual, but a pretty unique piece of fruit that is just delicious. You know, I think part of the development came out of that plums actually, kind of fell out of stature. People, they weren't distinguished enough. Years and years ago, the famous Luther Burbank, the father of so many wonderful fruits, he developed the original plum cot. And then men that worked with people that worked with him over time, we came into present time in about 1990, I'm not even sure what you call these guys, but breeders, I guess, Mr. Zager developed what we now call the Pluot, and he actually has a trademark on that, though it has become a very generic term used for almost any hybrid of an apricot and a plum.
And Earl, when we talk about breeders, this is not in any way, of course, genetically engineered hybriding, because you're only dealing with organic fruits and vegetables, so this is all natural hybrid methods to cross two very related species in a natural way and see what comes out of it, right?
Precisely. They cross and back cross, graft. I mean, it is a process that really takes 10, 20 years, and it fails more times than it works. Yeah, it's a very natural
to make it stable. Yeah, to create a stable outcome, a stable piece of fruit that's the same year after year.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. And to get one that really has flavor, because that's what these guys are really committed to. And Pluots, there's just a huge variety now. And like Mark said, they've been around for about 20 years, I think, really pretty popular in the last 10 to 15. And what's really great about talking right now is that this is really when you find a much broader selection. There's a couple varieties that come out in May and June, but the best ones, generally recognized as the best ones, start right around in August. And right now, my favorite, I don't know about you, Mark, but the Dapple Dandy.
Yeah, the Dapple Dandy is actually, I think most people, that's probably the one that they're most familiar with.
It's so unique in its appearance. You know, some people call it the dinosaur egg too.
Right. Yeah, it has that little bit of mottling in it.
Exactly. And it's kind of red and creamy color, and it's got some wonderful character. A lot of acid. It has some wonderful sweet acid combination. You know, very lovely to have. Make sure you find that one. The other great varieties are coming along in August and September. They're called the Flavor Grenade and the Flavor King and the Flavor Queen. These are all but more dark. There's a couple green ones. One's called a Flavor Queen. That's a green one with an orange interior. But all these, I think, are a great complement to the other stone fruit that happens this time of year with your peaches and nectarines.
Well, speaking of which, what's going on with the season this year? What's the crop like? How's the harvest? You know, what are people going to see out there if they go shopping for them?
Well, right now there is the Dapple Dandy, and you're gonna find a lot of perfect varieties coming on. It has been, I would say, close to the perfect year you could have. What I mean by that, you have these wonderfully warm days, hot days, really, to generate the sugar, and then the evenings cool down to about 60 degrees, which really rounds out the acid and develops color on the outside of the fruit. So we're in the middle of a huge harvest. Well, I would say prices are very stable. There's a good quantity out there, and there's been hardly any moisture to fight. So we're in the middle of a continuing great stone fruit year.
Now, Earl, one quick thing that you were mentioning to me was the fact that sometimes with the pluots in the marketplace, you can have them in your store 1 week, but not the next, right?
Very, 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 very true. I think there's a pretty big gap there between, I would say, the middle of June through the middle of July.
Right.
There really hasn't been one developed there.
Yeah, I just wanted to let customers know that if all of a sudden they see a gap, it's not because the season's over. It's just because there are still some gaps in the growing season with this particular fruit. So,
yeah,
but the rest of the season should be really good.
We're really hitting it now. August to September, you'll see a lot of really good varieties. Keep your eye open. And if you don't see them, there again, exercise that relationship with your produce person and ask for what you want.
Great. Thanks,
cool.
Earl. We appreciate it.
As always,
wonderful information from the voice of the market, Earl Herrick from
Great.
Earl's Organic Produce.
Thanks, Earl.
Great talking to you.
So just a couple of last things. Earl did such a great report there. A couple last things. If you're choosing them, you want to look for firm fruits, but not hard. You want to make sure that they have a little give to pressure, because actually, if they're rock-hard pluots, then they won't ripen. They won't ripen well, and so you don't want a rock-hard pluot ever. And then another thing, pluots ripen once they get off the tree. But you want to make sure when you get them home that you turn your pluots upside down so that the stem side down and set them on the counter. Keep them out of the sun, just at room temperature. And when they reach that desired kind of soft firmness that you want, then you can store them in the refrigerator for up to 3 days. And lastly, before you eat them, as I've said many times before about other fruit, bring them out, you know, and get them to room temperature before you eat them. That's how you're going to get your best flavor. And the key thing about pluots, they're better eaten fresh than cooked, because the skins have a lot of tannic acid in them, and so they tend to be more bitter when they're cooked, unlike a plum. So that's what's in season.
Fascinating, Mark. Thank you. Mark Mulcahy with the weekly update of what's going on in the world of produce, what's in season. Thanks,
Mark.
Thank
you, Mark.
Our topic today, very related to all these new varieties, are the old varieties as well. Our topic in this hour is the story in the seed, preserving the past and saving the future. We're talking about diversity and varieties with our wonderful guest who's joining us from Southern Georgia today, seed expert and author Janice Ray. And Janice, you kind of dove in with us into the world of seeds, the history, the seed catalogs that came out in the turn of the century, 1900. And over the years, we have lost anywhere between 75 and 95% of diversity of varieties that were commercially available, down to, you know, now 5 to 15%, 20%, depending on who you're asking. That's a dramatic loss. Your book is called The Growing Revolution, and you talked a little bit about the commercialization of seeds. Can you expand on that topic a little bit more, Mark? You wanted to.
Well, actually, I was in your book, Janice. You actually say that seed saving is a radical act, and so what do you mean by that?
I was visiting the garden of a wonderful seed saver in central Vermont named Sylvia DeVaught. And there was one line she spoke to me as we toured her salsify and all these amazing beds of full of vegetables. She said, "The system is so broken. It's not only broken, but destructive and self-destructive." And I didn't know which system she was talking about. I thought, you know, she could mean the food system. She could mean the agricultural system, our political system. She said, "I see in activism a kind of futility. The real power is in doing. It's in making the broken system irrelevant. That means non-participation in the existing broken system." And that struck me. I'm an activist, you know. I get arrested for protesting climate change, and I'm marching. And And so it hit home, and I, in a way, structured the whole book around that quote, that the real power is in doing. We live in an era where three multinational corporations control half of the global seed market. Daniel Botkin is a farmer in Gill, Massachusetts, and in a blog post he said that our big task is to decentralize society's entire relationship to agriculture, seeds, food production, food security. What happened with the industrialization of ag is that we went from the local to the global, from the small to the large, and on and on. It also from independent farmers to the victimization of farmers, from the nutritious food to the simply filling food. So when I talk about revolution, it's definitely a quiet revolution. Many of the gardeners occupy what's called the margin, you know, marginalities. They're not part of the monoculture. A monoculture also requires monoculture of thought, so that masses of people go along with what's happening to them. But these are people who may be keeping alive some family heirloom, a cantaloupe that their great-grandparents grew, and then their parents, or a bean that's been passed down in their family for generations. And then others have become curators. All their gardens are full of open-pollinated crops that grow true to seed. Mm. They are, you know, they're keeping alive these old varieties. They may be one of two or three people in the entire country or world that has these genetic resources in their gardens.
Yes.
And that's what I mean by revolution.
That's beautiful.
So
often people who don't want to even be known as a revolutionary.
So I want to dive into what you were saying about doing, about this being an act of doing, because it is kind of foreign to me, and I think we have a handful of listeners who don't know how to save seeds. Is it difficult, and how would somebody get themselves started at home?
Sita, I want to tell you that people could become seed activists even if they have no room in their backyards for a little garden or no interest really in putting some plants in pots. But if a person does, then I would suggest that the sexiest, easiest seed to save is the bean or the pea. There are three ways that seeds pollinate. They pollinate self-pollination, wind pollination, insects. Wind means, you know, the wind picks up pollen from the tassels of corn and blows it onto the silks. Insect means, you know, insect-pollinated plants have showy flowers and often fragrant flowers that attract pollinators that then are trekking pollen around from, you know, a male flower to a female flower. But peas and beans, so they very rarely cross-pollinate because they actually pollinate as the flower opens, and then the seed saving is easy in that you just simply leave extra peas on the plants until they dry. You then pick them, bring them inside, dry them in about 90-degree heat, stash them in some plastic bags or glass jars is even better, and put them, stuff them in the bottom of your freezer, and next year haul them out and plant them. There are some crops that get more and more complicated. Biennials are more complicated than annuals. Annuals that cross-pollinate with each other are going to require isolation distances, like most varieties of squash, for example. I want to recommend not my book, but another amazing book called Seed to Seed by a real seed expert named Suzanne Ashworth. And if somebody is interested in getting into the mechanics of keeping seed pure, that's definitely the book to own. Seed to Seed, Suzanne Ashworth.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And the topic of the hour is seeds and seed saving, the story in the seed, preserving the past, saving the future. We have Janice Ray, seed saver and author, on the line with us, who's joining us today from Southern Georgia. Janice, what's the, when you get into the practice of saving seeds, and you're right, you don't have to be a backyard gardener, you could just buy seeds at a seed bank, you know, local organic seeds, and give them to people who have gardens who can grow something out for you, or throw wildflower seeds around in your neighborhood. I know many people do certain activities to, you know, bring diversity and varieties back. But when you are in the practice of saving seeds, and it's not just beans and peas who are seemingly very easy to save, what's the greatest threat that people need to look out for? I know I started with bean seeds and they were almost indestructible. Is the fragility of other seeds the greatest threat, or the age, the storage? What's the biggest tip that you can give somebody who wants to dive in?
Oh, I think the greatest threat would be understanding that you cannot grow F1 hybrid seeds and save the crops, save your own seeds from those. You have to grow open pollinated varieties that grow true. So a hybrid is the offspring of a genetic cross that's done in laboratory. Basically, plant breeders would then come up with a recipe for a new variety. Let's say you want the wilt resistance of a tomato and also the flavonoid content of an heirloom tomato. And so breeders work for, you know, long hours and many generations of plants to come up with some recipe. Then this is used in laboratory or in the field to produce hybrid seeds. But when a grower, so let's say I plant hybrids, I grow out those tomatoes, and then I plant those seeds, I'm not going to get the tomato that I planted. I'll get any number of the ancestral strains used in the breeding of that tomato. And I think that's going to be a person's first lesson is don't grow hybrid seeds.
How do you know that it's a hybrid? Because you bought it as a hybrid?
All the hybrids by law are marked, and they will say hybrid or F1 hybrid, meaning F1 meaning first filial cross.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Helga, can I just interrupt?
Yeah, please.
Hybridization is not a bad process.
Yes.
I embrace science when it's done in the public interest for the common good over the long term. But hybridization is basically what plant breeding is, and it's what we've been doing for all these thousands of years. But when plant breeders really do the work of introducing new varieties, what it would take 7 to 10 generations to stabilize a cross.
Mm.
And what they'll do is they will sell it to us with the first generation F1, and the cross is not stable, and so it reverts back to any number of things. You may happen to get one of the, you know, one or two of the plants you wanted out of 100 or 200, but there's nothing that says you will. But over time, as the breeder continues to select and select for the characteristics he or she's looking for, then they would, over time, stabilize a cross.
Yes, and you might even get a delicious piece of tomato if you're lucky, but you just have no way of predicting what will come out of that, right, if you select hybrid seeds and keep planting them. We're speaking with Janice Ray, and Janice, we want to hear about the political and international importance of seeds. It's becoming more and more apparent to governments, with some substantial efforts that are being made in some parts of the world, for example, in Norway, to preserve as much diversity as possible. I'm talking about the seed vault that was built in Norway to preserve several thousand different species of seeds. We want to hear your take on that and share that story with our listeners. So please stay on the line. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with more on the topic of today's hour, seeds and seed saving, with our guest Janice Ray. Stay tuned.
You wake up every morning looking for your answer. You're waiting for your sign. Well, Jeremiah's on his way to tell the people.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at bowmancollege.org. That's BAUMANcollege.org.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com. The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Our topic today here on An Organic Conversation is the story in the seed, preserving the past and saving the future. We're talking with seed expert and author Janice Ray about a new book and about this growing movement of saving seeds and protecting biodiversity. And we'll dive back into that interview in a minute on hearing about governmental efforts to preserve diversity, especially of what's happening in Norway right now, with a big vault that is being built, that was built to preserve thousands of different varieties, kind of for the end of the world, really. More on that in a minute, because first, here's our very own chef Sita, Sita Rana Palomar, with her holistic bite.
Well, thank you, Helga. So I wanted to talk about some amazing seeds that really contribute to the health of your skin, actually. I'm talking about flax seeds. And flax are really popular in the health food movement. People know that they are an amazing plant-based source of omega-3s. But what it does for you on a topical level is that it acts as an anti-inflammatory, which means that if you suffer from acne or eczema or rosacea, it helps to reduce the redness and the inflammation on your skin by consuming these really powerful and nutrient-packed seeds. And it also helps to heal wounds very quickly. So these types of topical reactions that you're having can heal themselves more quickly if you've got a healthy amount of omega-3s in your body. Something that's also especially unique to flax seeds is that they help clear certain hormones that, when present in excess quantities, can contribute to things like acne and that's something that that is really unique to flax seeds alone. So we talk about omega-3 properties, but this is particularly something with flax. And it's so easy to get more flax in your diet, and you don't need a lot of it to benefit. I mean, we're only talking a couple of tablespoons a day, but if you want to add it to your morning smoothie, it'll give some nice thickness and a little bit of a nutty flavor. I also like to make what I consider a flax pudding, where I'll take some ground flax seeds and I'll mix it with coconut milk and some fresh fruit and maybe a couple of drops of stevia. So it's actually sugar-free, and it's so healthy. It's a really great way for you to get all of these amazing benefits, and I've just highlighted a few. But one of my tips for people who want to start getting into flax is to grind small quantities of it and keep it in an airtight container in your freezer. And then every day you can just pull that out, take a couple of tablespoons, stir it into some liquid, and then enjoy it in whatever creative way you can, and then also see the benefits on your skin. So take a look at my blog on flax seeds and the health benefits that it brings to you on our website and organicconversation.com.
How long does that stay fresh again when you grind it up?
That's a really good question. I keep mine in the freezer because the oils are so volatile and they go rancid really quickly, and I tend to go through mine very quickly. So I only grind maybe half a cup or a cup at a time, and I think for sure I go through it
3 to 5 days.
I hold mine for about a week in the freezer.
Great. Yes, flax seeds. Thank you, Sita. That's the Holistic Bite, always brought to you by Echo Bella. There's a beautiful way you can protect the animals and the planet and look and feel great while doing it. I'm talking about the natural and organic beauty products of Echo Bella.
Yes, excellent products from a company that certainly knows the health benefits of plant-based ingredients.
Yes, it's skincare and cosmetics without a compromise, always cruelty-free, vegan, and without any preservatives. And the founder, actually, Sally Malanga, has created a website just for our listeners where you can save, I believe, up to $100 on Echo Bella products. So if you want to try it, go to mybeautybite.com. It's mybeautybite.com. Save and enjoy Echo Bella products and let us know what you think. It's kind of the best in the market. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And still with us from Southern Georgia, calling in is Janice Ray, seed saver and author of an amazing book, The Seed Underground, A Growing Revolution to Save Food, that just came out. Janice, we talked about the stories around the seeds, the importance of diversity, the history of diversity and its loss over the last 100 or so years. We touched on a kind of a national awareness on a grassroots level, but even among governments now around the world. And particularly, I want to hear about your thoughts around the Norwegian efforts. I think the scenario is as follows. They picked one of the deepest, most remote mountain sites and dug a hole a couple miles deep to build this gigantic seed bank that is completely separate from the outer world and would survive even a nuclear super blow, including global warming, etc. It's built 550 feet above sea level simply to protect seeds, with many thousands of varieties protected there. What's your thought on that? Is that a good effort? Is that a not so good effort?
Well, I think first, Helga, we have to ask ourselves, why would Norway and countries around the globe support Norway in building such a thing? You know, in the permafrost, solid stone, reinforced concrete. To answer the question, imagine scenarios that might precipitate the need to replenish foodstuffs globally. Genetic tinkering gone awry. Suppose a comet hits the Earth. What if climate change rearranges agriculture as we currently practice it and sea levels rise? So I like the idea of this vault. It, you know, with the temperature permanently below freezing naturally, minus 23 degrees Fahrenheit, and then with refrigeration brought below zero, seeds in watertight, airtight packages can last anywhere from 50 to 2,000 years. Now, I want to, the warning that we have to talk about is that seeds have a lifespan, and the oldest seeds we've ever found were in a tomb in Argentina, 600 years old. So the best way to preserve seeds are in living gene banks. A seed vault is a genetic conservation project, but a garden is a real living gene bank. So the difference is, I think this is a great backup plan, but I think that there are two schools of thought here for food security, and one is the people who think that we'll be safer with a bigger military, more locks on the doors, a gun under the pillow, and then the other school of thought is that we're the people who believe that we're safer if we're out in the world interacting with others and attempting to understand, you know, the world around us.
Yes, very true.
And, you know, Janice, listening to you, it just, I don't know, it just makes me smile. A garden is a living gene bank, and that makes me very hopeful. So what makes you hopeful in every day in the garden and every day, every time you're sitting down to the page to create your beautiful written word? What's making you hopeful right now?
Well, I think more than anything, this movement is full of people who are understanding, who want to eat real food, as Michael Pollan calls it, and are learning to cook it, you know, who have just decided to take health into their own hands and sovereignty over food into their own hands. They don't want to leave. They don't want to leave it to industry to feed us, and that is just incredibly exciting to me. All over the country, seed activists are rising up. Not only just so many new farmers and young farmers and women farmers, but also people who are lobbying the farm bill for more organic research into organic seeds and organic crops. There are people passing food sovereignty ordinances in their villages and cities. California has Proposition 37 on the ballot, which would require the labeling of genetically modified foods. We haven't spoken much about GM foods, but they're exceedingly problematic, and the only way that we know you can avoid them or hope you can avoid them is by eating organic, because organic is by definition precludes a genetic modification. There are people working for the intellectual property rights of indigenous farmers.
Yes.
That these large multinationals don't patent away their antique vintage family heirlooms.
Lots to be hopeful
yes.
about. Thank you, Janice. And yes, we had shows on GMOs, and we will have shows on genetic engineering coming up, especially in highlighting the efforts in California, the Right to Know campaign. Thank you for your wonderful work, Janice. And if people want to learn more about the book and your book tour, they can go to Janice Ray, that's janisseray.weebly.com, Janice Ray, or just Google her, author and seed expert. Thank you, Janice, for being on the show today. Wonderful to have you and explore the world of seeds with you. Pleasure.
Thank you, Helga.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark and Sita.
Thank you so much, Janice.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer Kristen Ponger, studio engineer Robert Costa, news services Jen Lloyd, underwriting production Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, visit iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
And we love to hear from you. Please send us your comments or questions to share at anorganicconversation.com. We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sitarani Palomar.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time, next week. See you then.
Bye.